Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From the Detroit Auto Show and Chrysler this morning came this news. The Dodge Dart is back. Not the Dart of old, though. A zippy new compact on an Italian Alfa Romeo frame. And so a chat with the CEO of Fiat and Chrysler coming up. Also, the future of TV on the broadcast today. And hey, where'd all the snow go? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace podcast for Monday, the 9th of January. Good to have you here. It is technically called the North American International Auto Show, the big car-making gathering that kicked off this morning in Detroit. It is, as most auto shows are, an event where manufacturers show off their new machines. The aforementioned Dodge Dart is Chrysler's big entry this year in what looks to be a fairly promising year for the big three. Sergio Marchionne is the CEO of Chrysler and the Italian automaker Fiat as well. It owns almost 60% of Chrysler, last time I checked. He's at the show in Detroit. Mr. Marchionne, good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
So it's been quite a week for the American automobile industry. Great sales figures last week, big auto show this week. Are you ready to say that Detroit is back?
Yeah, I mean, I made a comment this morning. I was speaking to some of the journalists on the stand. When you walk around, you get the distinct feeling that the Detroit Auto Show hasn't been like this since the 90s. So whatever it is that we lived through in terms of purgatory and hell for the last 5 years, I think we've paid our penance and life moves on from here. But the prospects are quite good.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, what is Fiat and Chrysler going to do to build on that momentum that you clearly think you have?
Well, look, there's a lot more work that's underway. Most of the products will be visible in 2013. It will see over 13.5 million cars as the SARS number for this year. And that number should be at around 14 million or slightly above that number for 2013.
So, you know, you keep saying 2013. Are you guys taking 2012 off? I mean, you got 12 months before you get to the big year for you.
No, it is. But I think we're seeing some sense being restored to the marketplace. We have taken out all the excess capacity that the system needed to take out, and we're rebuilding the car business now a piece at a time. But I think the base on which we're doing this is a lot stronger.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, you spent $2 billion plus or minus a couple of years ago to buy Chrysler, and it sounds certainly like you feel you got your money's worth. Did the American taxpayer and the bailout of the auto industry, did they get their money's worth?
Look, what I know is that we walked into an entity that had been cleansed through a Chapter 11 process and that received over $7 billion in financing from the U.S. and Canadian taxpayers. All that money was paid back on May 24th with interest, and we paid 19.7% interest to the United States Treasury on those advances. I think that the U.S. taxpayers got their money's worth, certainly in terms of the funding that was provided to Chrysler coming out of bankruptcy. The number of jobs that have been created by the resurrection of Chrysler and the benefit to the underlying economy is far outweighs any of the financing that may have been put in place for these entities at the time.
I read this morning as I was getting ready for this interview that Chrysler accounts for about two-thirds of your profit. First of all, is that right? And second of all, I think it's kind of interesting that Chrysler gets two-thirds of Fiat Chrysler's profit.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's that high, but certainly it's about 60% in today's market, given the fact that Europe today is in the condition that it's in.
Yeah, interesting point, the condition that it's in. How worried are you about Europe for the Fiat part of your company?
Well, I'm worried about Europe in general. I think that there are a number of very difficult decisions that Europeans need to make going forward. I'm hopeful that Europe will get its act together. If it does, then I think, you know, consumers will come back in and restore some type of sensible demand. But today, the markets are not in good shape.
Are you going to fully merge Fiat and Chrysler at some point, a la the Daimler-Chrysler arrangement of a number of years ago?
Yeah.
By
the way, the parallel with Daimler-Chrysler I find a bit disturbing.
Well, it's a little tricky because it didn't work out so well.
That's exactly why I find it disturbing. But I think that the merger of the two companies is inevitable. We're now running it as one entity anyway. So we need to bring the governance structures together.
And then finally, are you going to take it to the market? Are you going to bring Chrysler public again?
It has to in some fashion.
When?
No earlier than 13, and no later, and no later than 15.
2013 is a magic year for you, I guess.
It's a magic year. We'll talk again then.
All right, I'll give you a call. Sergio Marchionne, the CEO of Fiat and Chrysler. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks.
Today would have been a Mezza day for a Chrysler IPO. The major indices were up just a fraction of a piece. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Lover or hater, Susie Orman is a force in the personal finance business. She is quite possibly the biggest personal finance celebrity there is. So the news today that she's breaking into the prepaid debit card business is actually news in certain circles. Orman's promising low fees and free credit reports for her customers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Susie Orman says put your financial life in her hands. Sign up for her approved prepaid debit card and you're home free.
My goal has always been to save America one wallet at a time, and I believe that this card will absolutely do so.
The approved card works like this. Deposit at least $20 onto it every month and pay just $3 a month. Use the card to pay bills and shop. Now, other celebrities have put their faces on prepaid cards, but Orman is different. She has a personal finance show on CNBC. Viewers rely on her for advice. And now she'll be peddling a prepaid card. Conflict of interest?
I don't know if she's in it to make money.
That's Lauren Saunders, managing attorney at the National Consumer Law Center. She met with Orman a few months ago. She believes Orman really is on a mission.
To prove that prepaid cards can be a viable option for people and can help them on the pathway to financial success.
By building good credit without a credit card. Orman's card offers free credit reports from TransUnion. She wants consumers to be able to build up their credit scores through debit cards. Michelle John of Consumers Union says that's unheard of in the financial world.
I don't know if we could quite call it a game changer, but it certainly would shake things up.
But Jun says even in her missionary zeal, Orman does charge some extra fees, and you should read the fine print before you sign up. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You can hear from Orman herself about that card this weekend on our personal finance show. It's called Marketplace Money. Check your local listings, I believe is the saying. For a long time, healthcare economists had thought slowdowns and recessions didn't have all that big an effect on how much we spend on medical care. That when you got to see the doctor, you got to go see the doctor. Turns out that's not true at all. The official numbers came out today, and 2010 was another slow growth year for healthcare spending. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner explains.
Every year for most of the past decade, healthcare spending has been on a tear, up 6, 7, 8%. That changed in 2009 when spending grew less than 4%. In 2010, that growth was about the same. Economist Paul Ginsberg runs the Center for Studying Health System Change in Washington, D.C. He says what's really surprising is that during 2010, when people could afford less healthcare, they also said that they had fewer unmet medical needs.
People's standards of what their needs are may be changing.
How much medical care you think you need, he says, has more to do with how much you can afford. The White House released its official 2010 health spending report today. It says we still went to the hospital a lot that year, but we cut back on semi-optional services like doctor visits and prescriptions. Bob Atlas of Avalere Health says there's a big reason people are reconsidering that knee surgery. We're paying more out of pocket. Insurance companies and employers are shifting more of the tab to policyholders.
There's enough of a cost barrier that on the margin, decisions are tilting more toward not consuming rather than consuming.
But are we less healthy? Well, like an economist, Paul Ginsberg says it depends. Some untreated problems get a lot worse.
But there are also lots of other issues where, when they're not addressed, they get better because the human body is pretty good at healing itself.
The problem is, he says, the human brain isn't very good at knowing the difference. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
We're probably still a good couple of lawsuits away from figuring out exactly how much power the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is eventually going to have. Senate Republicans say they're going to challenge President Obama's recess appointment of Richard Cordray to run that agency. The president says he did it because without a permanent director, the bureau couldn't do key parts of its job, one big part of which is regulating what are called non-bank activities, check cashing, debt collection, payday lending. Commentator and San Francisco resident Mark Laws has some experience with that.
My mother died early on a Saturday in St. Louis. Right away, my sister asked, "When are you coming out?" I was a cook at Al's Good Food Cafe on Mission, making $10 an hour. I didn't have the money. I collected from friends what they could give, got an advance from my boss, but I still couldn't get there. So I went to this payday loan store. You can't miss their signs. I got a $300 loan. You write a check for $300, but you date it for your next payday. You get the cash right away, minus $45. I went to St. Louis. I lost a week of work. I came back, and I was still broke. And I had this loan. The problem is, you have to pay the whole $300 in 2 weeks. That's their payday. And there's no way to pay off just a piece. I was making $500 every 2 weeks. I just didn't have $300. And they were about to cash my post-dated check. They said, "Don't worry, we'll give you another loan to cover it." Minus, of course, another $45 fee. This went on for 2 years. I was on the rat wheel. I paid $45 every 2 weeks because I didn't have $300 to pay off my debt. When my car broke down, I asked if I could please have more time. And they said no. They threatened to call the DA, press charges for a bounced check. I was trapped, ashamed. I didn't want to tell anyone. I'd written a check and thought, it's easy. When you ain't got nothing, you think, what's 45? It's not going to break me. But when I figured it out after 2 years, it was $1,000. I thought loan sharking was a crime. It's not. It's legal. Finally, my credit union asked me what was going on with all these checks. And they offered a real loan I could handle. And that's what I did. I've never had more than a couple hundred in the bank, and the money's always earmarked. Sometimes you just give up. And when you give up, you do stupid stuff. I've decided I'm not giving up anymore.
Mark Laws comes to us from My Life is True. That's a project of the New America Foundation. Tell us what you think about what you hear on the broadcast. Our website is marketplace.org. All you have to do is click on that link that says contact. Coming up on the one-year anniversary of the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, and with it the end of the toughest year the nuclear power industry's had in a good long while. Since January of last year, the number of reactors online around the world has fallen sharply and has raised big questions about what was looking for a while there like a nuclear power renaissance of sorts. No country was counting more on that revival than France, as Christopher Wirth reports.
France has invested aggressively in nuclear power. It gets a whopping 75% of its electricity from it and has 58 reactors spread all over the country. Here on the rugged coast of Normandy, number 59 is well underway. The reactor being built here is what's known as the European Pressurized Reactor, or EPR, designed by Areva. The French company's executive, Jacques Besnanou, says it's the first of a whole new generation of nuclear reactors.
It's a very, very safe reactor, and it's been built after lessons learned from different accidents.
Accidents such as Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and even the September 11th terrorist attacks.
For example, it can resist a crash from a commercial airplane, and it can withstand a core meltdown.
The French government has always hoped the EPR would become a poster child for France's expertise in nuclear technology, and that Areva would build many more of them all over the world. Stephen Thomas, a professor of energy policy at the University of Greenwich, says the French state has about a 90% stake in the company.
France saw itself as a center for nuclear technology, and what they were looking for was to build maybe one or two in France, which would demonstrate their skills and would open up an export market for them.
But Cash Bruchette, an energy analyst at IHS Global Insight, says the EPR reactor being built in France and another in Finland are now years behind schedule due to construction delays. And at nearly $8 billion apiece, the price tag is now double the original estimate.
It's certainly not worked out as the kind of poster child that the French government had hoped for it to be.
Since the earthquake and tsunami in Japan last year that damaged the nuclear plant at Fukushima, Germany and a handful of other countries have decided to pull out of nuclear power altogether. They've closed down existing plants and canceled plans for new ones. Bruchette says that same skepticism is striking a chord in France, where nuclear power has enjoyed wide support in the past.
The popularity of nuclear power has been sinking for quite some time, well before Fukushima.
France heads into an election this year, and François Hollande, the socialist candidate, is polling well ahead of President Nicolas Sarkozy. Hollande has vowed to drastically reduce France's reliance on nuclear power. Olivier Ferrand is a politician with the Socialist Party.
France is the only country in the world where nuclear energy is so high, so the idea is to have a more balanced approach.
If the nuclear industry is feeling less welcome in France, it's already begun looking for growth in emerging markets. China, for example, is building two of Areva's new EPR reactors. Bertrand Beret, an advisor to Areva, says Fukushima actually demonstrates the safety advantages of the company's EPR design.
If instead of the four old plants, which were destroyed in the Fukushima accident, we had had two EPRs, and they had the same earthquake and the same tsunami, we wouldn't have today a Fukushima accident.
But we do, and it could be another tough year for the nuclear industry. Areva is now facing its first ever operating loss, upwards of $2 billion, as demand for its services declines. The company has announced 1,500 job cuts in the months ahead. In France, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I've been down U.S. looking for it, actually, prior to Christmas, New Year's, and yeah, she's a bit dry.
Not enough snow to ski on, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials rose 32 points today, about 0.25%, closed at 12,392. The NASDAQ up 2 points, 0.1%, 2,676. The S&P 500 up 2 points, 0.25%, 1,280 at the bell. Financial stocks posted gains today. Morgan Stanley and Citigroup both added nearly 2%. Bank of America deposited nearly 1.5%. Goldman Sachs up 1.33%. J.P. Morgan chased the odd bank out, if you will, gave back 0.2% today. Earlier, we talked to Chrysler CEO Sergio Marchionne. Carmaker stocks posted mixed results today. Ford drove up 0.75% on the announcement of a new plug-in hybrid version of its Fusion sedan. GM showed off two low-priced sporty concepts and fell 0.33%. Chrysler, as you know, not a public firm yet. Major European exchanges down across the board. London's FTSE, French CAC 40, and the Germany's DAX all down. Bonds were flat. No change to the yield on the 10-year. 1.96% the yield. You're listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the National Transportation Safety Board discusses the safety of air shows and air races. All eyes will be on New Hampshire for the presidential primary. And happy birthday, Rod Stewart. He'll be 67. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. So you know that saying, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? Yeah, well, this week, not so much, and it's by design, too. The Consumer Electronics Show convenes in Las Vegas this week. It is, as the marketing brochures tell us, the largest consumer technology trade show in the world. All the latest toys and greatest gadgets. We, though, we are going a little back to the future this week, the future of TV, to be precise, and the battle over who's going to bring your living room online. John Moe is the host of the Marketplace Tech Report. He'll be at the CES all week talking the future of TV. Hey, John.
Hey, Kai.
All right, so travel with me to my living room of the future. Say, what, 5 years from now, I'm sitting there watching TV. What does it look like?
Well, imagine your smartphone, but stretched out to 52 inches of screens. It's going to have apps. It's going to be connected online. It's going to have a bunch of things going on with it. And everybody is trying to make that TV. Google is making a huge effort right now. They tried last year launching Google TV, and it was a kind of a disaster. It was really clunky. Had this remote that was like a big QWERTY keyboard. It was awful. It was like, it felt like we lost a war or something. So now the race is on to get that same technology and make it work smoothly. They want you to be comfortable in your living room, Kai.
Wait. I am comfortable in my living room. I've got a couch. I've got a big screen. I got a TiVo. Why do I need whatever the future of TV is?
Well, you don't. I mean, but you might want it. That's the thing. Before you had the TiVo, you probably thought, why would I need this machine That's that records true. Everything.
Yes.
And so it's really about figuring out how long this technology will take to mature and if it really works best for you. I mean, there's a big contest right now to figure out how to make it smoothest for you. The technology itself is not all that innovative. You hook up a computer technology to your TV. It's a question of making it work smoothly for you so you can discover new shows, new movies, new ways to be entertained and informed.
Getting one gizmo, right? Instead of a set-top box and an Xbox and, all that stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, what we're seeing right now is a lot of consolidation in consumer electronics. Fewer devices that can do more things and, connect in more ways, connect to each other in more ways. So the TV becomes smarter, more connected.
Other than just selling me the box, what's in it for the companies? I mean, Samsung and LG and all these guys who are going to make these big TVs that are hooked up to the internet?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's trying to get buzz. Everybody's trying to be the belle of the ball and get noticed. But I think there's a real race on right now. It's a little like the space race, and everybody's trying to get there before Apple launches a smart TV, which is the most heavily rumored thing in TV that I've heard in the last several months, that Apple will come out with something that will be to televisions what the iPhone was to phones and what the iPod was to music. And after getting caught flat-footed with the iPod and the iPhone and the iPad, a lot of these other electronics makers are saying, okay, never again. If you fool me a fourth time, shame on me several times over. Yeah, so they want to get there first.
But I was at a buddy's house over the holidays, and he has this thing called Apple TV. It's a little black box. It's on the top of his TV, and it lets him do all kinds of whiz-bang stuff. Is there more coming?
Does he talk to it with Siri?
I don't know.
No, probably not. Well, the hot rumor is that Apple would make an actual TV, the TV itself, not just peripheral, and it would be all sleek and sexy and fashionable, and it would be the must-have, and people would line up outside the stores, the whole Apple shebang, and that you would talk to it using the Siri voice application, the artificial intelligence technology that's on the iPhone 4S now. So you'd say, Siri, find me Law & Order Season 3, and then Siri would go off and find that for you.
The future of television, John Moe. Host of our Marketplace Tech Report. He's at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, baby. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kai.
Going to make me no friends in colder parts of the country, but I got to tell you, the weather here in Southern California, it's getting old. Warm, sunny highs in the 80s, no rain, and most definitely not a lot of snow up in the mountains. And it's the same in a lot of other places. The Global Snow Lab at Rutgers University, and first of all, there is a Global Snow Lab, but it says snow coverage, that is snow on the ground this year, is among the worst on record. It's bad for ski areas, sporting goods sales, condos by the ski lifts, and also athletes whose livelihoods depend on the stuff. Professional snowboarders, for just one example. So we got pro snowboarder Travis Rice on his cell phone. Travis, it's good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
Hey, tell me where we tracked you down and more importantly, how the snow is, man.
Well, I'm currently on slope up in Interior British Columbia. And actually, I hate to admit it, but it's about a meter of fresh snow here. We're just doing some last-minute adjustments and doing a contest up here called the Red Bull Supernatural in about 3 weeks, getting some final stuff together for it.
So now you've gone way, way north to get snow, but, judging by the news today, there's not a whole lot of snow in the rest of this country down here.
I know. I've been down U.S. cruising around a bit, looking forward, actually, prior to Christmas, New Year's, and, yeah, she's a bit dry to start this year.
Well, so talk to me for a minute about that. I mean, you're a guy who makes his living on powdery white stuff. What does this do to you?
Well, we're coming on the heels of, I think we had the most snowfall ever recorded where I lived out in Jackson Hole last year. And I even remember reading a Farmer's Almanac article, I think in October, that basically stated the majority of this year's mainland precipitation was coming in mid-January and beyond. So I think winter's still going to come with full force.
Sounds kind of like you're hoping here.
Oh, I'm optimistic.
Yeah. What does it do to you, though, in terms of practice time and travel costs? It has to make everything more expensive.
It does, man. And, it's definitely tough. It's tough for, the whole industry. I think sales, obviously, are completely down. Biggest sailing season being, prior to Christmas, New Year's. So that definitely hurts. you know, Europe's been hit really hard the last 2 years, and they're finally getting snow. So it's kind of ebb and flow.
When you go to events and they have to make snow, is that like kissing your sister, kind of?
I mean, it's not optimal, but, you know, they do a good job with contests able to make snow. You know, unfortunately, I actually just heard yesterday that the North Face Masters in Snowbird was just canceled due to no snow.
Wow.
And I think, you know, there's going to be a few more contests indeed that are trying to deal with natural snow. Granted, you know, X Games, Dew Tour, you know, some of the pipe events, they've been able to still go because they're able to make snow.
When events get canceled, you lose potential prize money, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the riders that plan their season around going to events like that, it hurts. You know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, they have a bad year this year and, you know, it's really the budgets next year and the year after that kind of suffer from that.
Right. Well, Travis, thanks for taking the time. Travis Rice on the mountain someplace up in British Columbia. See ya.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, there's a job opening in Washington for a good numbers person, should you happen to know one. The president's chief of staff, Bill Daley, stepped down today. He actually said he wants to spend more time with his family. Didn't come as a surprise, though. Washington watchers have known this resignation was coming for a while. Daley is going to be replaced by Jack Liu, which gets us to the job opening part. Liu is leaving his post as director of the Office of Management and Budget to move up the White House organizational charts. The name at the top of our chart says it's Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow added 32 points, about 0.25%. The NASDAQ up 2 points, 0.1%. The S&P 500 also inched up 2 points. That's 0.25%. Our producers include Gina Delvac, Justin Ho, Millie Jefferson, and Fiona Ng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time, back here, more on the future of TV. If how we watch is changing, what might we actually see?
If you can find an internet company broadcasting NFL via internet, you'll see the industry crumble.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.